You are watching the Mighty beIN Sports, joining up the world from our international broadcast centre here in Qatar. I'm Richard Keys.
I'm Andy Gray.
Talking to all corners of the globe on Twitter, and there's a podcast available now as well. If you've enjoyed the programme, and I can't think of any reason why you wouldn't,
nope.
Tell your mates about it, and you can download the podcast later.
Yep, can't find it.
On our show this week, Brendan, what are you thinking about? Walking away from Celtic on the precipice of becoming immortal, a treble in the offing. No, he's the new boss at Leicester City. We'll talk to Michael Grant, the Scottish football correspondent, about his decision, which really has not gone down very well at all. And that's an understatement in the green and white half of Glasgow, Andy.
I told you when we were talking midweek how it would go down. And Celtic fans are absolutely furious. The timing shocks me. It really shocks me, Richard. This is a young man who would probably only have had Jock Stein, the late great Jock Stein, ahead of him as Celtic greats as a manager. Ahead of Dalglish, ahead of Billy McNeil, ahead of all these people. Gordon Strachan's the one of success, Martin O'Neill. And I think that he's destroyed all that with the timing of his exit of Celtic. 10 weeks, come on, Brendan, 10 weeks was all Celtic fans wanted you to stay for. Complete the treble, make yourself immortal. They probably have built a statue of him outside Parkhead if he'd achieved that. Not much chance of a statue now. More an effigy will be going up there.
I like that.
You like it?
Yeah.
I thought it was quite good. I only just thought about that just there as I was talking. It's very good.
We'll be talking with his replacement, Neil Lennon, who's got, it's extraordinary. Yeah. This weekend, a cup tie against Hibs, the team he left, 10, 14 days ago?
4 weeks ago, I was the manager of Hibs, so I know all the players and the staff, and now I'm going back there tomorrow as a Celtic manager. It's very surreal, but you know the way football is, Richard. It throws up these little quirks and coincidences, and at the end of the day, they're on the cusp of doing something very special here again, and make sure that I'm fully concentrated on getting that right for tomorrow.
And here's a Keys and Gray world exclusive. Guyana, who would have thought, on the brink of qualifying for the Gold Cup for the first time. This is a country, Andy, that's recently discovered copious amounts of oil and gas. New Qatar, I suppose you could call it.
Yeah.
They are throwing everything at their sport going forward. They are managed by Michael Johnson, the former Birmingham and Derby County footballer. Michael joins us later in the programme.
Yeah, watch Michael a lot.
It is an extraordinary tale.
It is extraordinary. But, you know, it's the power of sport, and particularly the power of football. It's huge.
And oil and gas.
And oil and gas. Well, if you can fund it, it's even better.
This is what we did last week on Keys and Gray.
For me personally, why not give him a chance? He's done extremely well so far. You know, if they keep playing like this, I think he's going to have a great chance to get the job.
No, Martin, I'm not a football man, Glenn, at the FA. He leaves at the end of the season. Scudamore was already gone from the Premier League. And this past week, Sean Harvey, chief exec of the EFL, was forced out of his post. Why is football in the UK a rudderless ship?
I mean, Scudamore left the Premier League directly after the top six decided they wanted more of the pie.
Yes.
You know, and that's what's happening. The big clubs have asserted themselves, and it's going all the way through football.
I said, show us your best trick. So they're all flicking it up, catching it on the neck, keeping up with their shoulder. I went, nah. I said, throw me that ball. So he threw me the ball, took it on my chest, and I smashed it in the net. I said, that's the best trick you'll ever learn in football.
This is John Farnworth, who is a freestyler. He's already made his way to base camp on Everest like this. The next challenge, Andy? Sahara Desert.
Obviously, it's going to be very, very hot. And the desert is going to be pretty tough in terms of the sand. Yeah. So I've been training a lot, you know, I'm feeling good shape. And, you know, you can only do what you can, Cotty, in terms of preparation. But hopefully, you know, it will be another record.
I'm still chuckling at Andy's demonstration of his favourite tricks.
Listen, it's the same all these years ago. They say the game's moved on. That's still the best trick you'll ever learn.
This only gets worse. I thought after Neil Warnock's conciliatory press conference recently, they might find a way forward. It would appear not. And Willie Mackay, the agent, Willie's boy was the agent.
Yeah.
In the middle of all this, Andy, may have made another error.
Yeah, it's a miss.
Which Nantes and Cardiff are going to continue to discuss. going forward.
It's a mess.
Seems to have no end. We mentioned this last week. Gordon Taylor, ironically, as a result of the pressure that we brought to bear, has announced a review at the Professional Football Association.
Who appointed them?
Gordon.
Himself?
Yeah.
Good lad. Okay.
These are a collection of stories that have caught our eye and we've kept an eye on. Notts County, we were talking about recently, the oldest football league club in the world, Andy, have been issuing with a winding up petition. Now, these things don't necessarily mean the end.
No, they don't.
But they are part and parcel of a process that could ultimately lead to a place that Notts County do not want to be.
Up for sale,
they need a buyer double quick.
Yeah, well, let's hope they get one.
And Dilly Ding, Dilly gone. Claudio Ranieri, sacked as the Fulham manager. If you remember, risk-free is how they announced him.
Listen, I don't feel sorry for Claudio. He's been in the game long enough. But if you're Fulham, you reap what you sow, I'm afraid. I thought it was a staggering decision to appoint him in the first place. Are you telling me Jukanovic couldn't have done better than this guy's done?
I
just think that, you know, I think they thought they were going to be clever and get him in and do this. I'm sorry, that is exactly what
Although the
was
view
happening.
At the London Football Awards last night was a little different to yours. Carrie Brown went along for us.
I feel very empathetic towards that. I think it's a harsh thing to happen to a man of his status. You know, only 2.5 years ago he'd taken Leicester to an unbelievable championship. And everyone was really, you know, singing his name from the rooftops. I think it's very sad that he's put his body on the line again for a club that I love so much, Fulham. And I think it's a pity that, you know, he hasn't had the chance to at least get more time to show what a good job he can do.
I don't like seeing managers get the sack, but I think he's done all he could there. He looks like he's lost a little bit of the intensity that perhaps he had in other jobs. He just looked tired to me, and sometimes the performance of the players look tired. Defensively, they're shocking this season. He hasn't addressed that problem. So maybe it is time.
Really surprised at the start of the season when they made the change originally. You know what I mean? You know, getting promoted last year, I thought it was a really early announcement to actually make that change and make the change then. Claudio Ranieri has not really had the impact I think Fulham were hoping for. And to make the change now looks like the final throw of the dice. You know, they've got a lot to do, but Scotty Parker in charge, knows the club well, good leadership qualities. I've worked with him as a player and obviously wish him well.
He's the man on the spot and the right man, I think, in this situation. He knows the workings of the clubs, of the club. He knows what's happened this season. It's been a little bit turbulent, hasn't it? Off the pitch as well as on it. And him being fairly experienced coach now, he knows the players. It's obviously much different being number one. All of a sudden the lads regard you in a different way, and he's got to regard the players in a different way. But I hope he gets a shout at it. You know, he's got this chance now, 10 games to go, to get a feel for it, and it'd be nice to see him get the job full time if he does well.
Thank you, boys. As Andy just said, a number of them photobombing each other.
Yeah.
By the way, I'd have sacked Ranieri on the basis of that jacket he wore the other night.
You didn't like it?
Shocker.
That wasn't good.
Chelsea have got trouble, we know. Manchester City, who refused recently to comment to more footy leaks about this story, Andy, the fact that it's alleged they gave his agent, Jadon Sancho, work to cover up a £200,000 payment. It's alleged was part of a deal. Let's not get too much deeply into that. But the FA now said we need to look at this. So Manchester City are going to have to respond to Der Spiegel's allegations.
Yeah, well, you know, smoke and fire comes to mind a little bit.
Meanwhile, Manchester City will be playing in Puma kit going forward, a deal worth £650 million announced this week, which leads me to think, if Nike are giving this up, where are they going?
Go on. Man United already. Adidas, are they?
I think they're...
Adidas, £750 million.
I think they're going to London.
Ah, Tottenham.
Right, on we go. We go. Keep going, would be my advice to Manchester United. They know better than we do, Andy, but it's not £500,000 a week, is it? It's £700,000 a week.
Yeah. He's got an argument, hasn't he?
Alexis Sanchez. Well, I think he's got a very strong
argument. He's been the best player for the last
3 years. And what this will do, as we've said, if he gets somewhere near what he wants, it will trigger an explosion.
Well, who's next in the line then? Who's in the door next?
All of them. I would be knocking on the door tomorrow morning.
Pogba's next.
Jose Mourinho is with us this weekend to watch El Clasico. He'll be watching the Merseyside derby with Andy and myself as well. We'll discuss with him, I'm sure. Anyway, Watford have paid Everton $4 million to take. Oh, no, 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 no. It's the other way around, isn't it?
Well,
Everton have paid Watford.
Oh, that's nice. Well, you guys have Watford have paid them $4 million to keep them. Oh, that's nice.
But the two clubs have.
Don't worry, after this weekend, you'll be a hero again. Don't you worry about that.
We'll see. We'll see. But they have reached a settlement, those two.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club, Brian Reid. I was delighted to read that this week. Just a small chink of light. But if one or two more start thinking that way, Andy, maybe listen, all is not lost.
Listen, you know how I feel about VAR.
It's a great article. Have a look.
It's a great article. But you know how I feel about VAR. Listen, it's not perfect, and therefore it shouldn't be in use. I'm not against technology helping us. You know I'm all for that goal line technology. I think it's been great. This is too invasive. It affects the fabric of football far too much, in my opinion. And I think to rein it back a little bit, I'm in the Danny Baker camp.
Danny Baker, if football ain't broke,
don't fix it. No. I'm with that. I'm with that. But we see. We shall see. We're getting it next year. Whether we
this
like
is
it or
an
not.
Example of headline writer and picture desk working in unison. Perfect fit, the headline, and a picture of Brenton's immaculate teeth.
Oh, is that what you're saying? To go with that picture?
Absolutely. Well, why else do you think they put that together?
Well, I don't know. You're the journalist.
Oh, it's just genius.
So they would sit down there, the headline writer and the picture editor would get together and put this together.
Of course they would. Genius.
Perfect fit. Teeth, not the football. That's terrible. That's terrible.
A week ago, Maurizio Sarri and Kepa were falling out, and Chelsea's been a difficult place to be this past week. The suggestion in the Telegraph this week that may have had something to do with it. A little light-hearted, of course, because all football stadia now are. But Wembley made it very plain before the kick-off last week. No smoking.
Well, that could be part of his agitation.
Exactly.
The day,
exactly.
That's why he was angry.
And I haven't got much
to say. And
that's
why he went through that door. He was going to sneak through for a quick fag and come back again.
I haven't got much to add to this, but it's a great picture. I'll leave you to read the caption yourself as well. That's been a good teammate, isn't it?
Yeah, he's looking for his tie-ups to tie shots together. That's what happened, obviously. I would think.
Right, fixtures this weekend. Paul Robinson's with us. Jason McAteer is here as well. Andy, I've had a go on Twitter at predicting the outcome of these matches. Go and have a look. It's just a bit of fun. All of them live, of course, with us here on beIN Sports through the weekend. And I repeat that Jose Mourinho will be watching Everton play Liverpool with us after El Clasico, the second of the week, with our Arabic colleagues. So, Brendan Rodgers, hero or villain? Depends, I suppose, on which club you support, but it's caused uproar, his decision to leave Celtic in Scotland, and we will be discussing later. This was a brilliant read. Michael Grant, Scottish football correspondent of The Times. What an introduction. A common theory on the five stages of grief, he writes. They are listed as denial, anger, bargaining, depression and acceptance. Celtic fans this week went straight to stage two.
Yeah,
anger after Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, they did.
And sometimes things you say in life come back to haunt you.
Of course they do.
Can you imagine me walking out on Celtic, the club I've supported as a boy, to take any other job? I've just got my dream job. Why would I do that? Well, he has. On the brink, the precipice of becoming immortal up there. A treble-treble.
Treble-treble. Not done. As I've said to you, I think we'd have left him only just behind the late, great Jock Stein and the list of great Celtic coaches. Not now.
And if you're following this story, you know that this anger has deepened in the last 24 hours into a place that's actually quite concerning. I'll say no more than that. Michael Grant joins us. I'm pleased to say. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Richard. Hi, Andy. How are you?
Yeah, we're good. We're good.
We are bemused, Michael, hopeful that you can help us a little bit. Why did Brendan Rodgers walk away from Celtic this week?
Well, I think there's been tension between Brendan Rodgers and the Celtic board for a few months now, really dating back to last summer when he didn't feel he was really back to the extent that he should be in terms of having money to spend in the transfer market. And, you know, there were issues right at the end of the window last summer. He came out and spoke publicly and, you know, critically about the club's strategy. I think those of us around covering the club at that time thought that maybe the writing was on the wall even as early as that, because, you know, it was an obvious tension and an obvious split between Rodgers and the board. He talked about the club going backwards. If it stood still, it would effectively go backwards. He talked about the rot setting in if there wasn't substantial investment in the squad. Now, of course, Brendan Rodgers took about £60 million worth of Champions League money by qualifying for the group stage in his first two seasons. So he was entitled to feel that he should get proper backing. So that indicated the first real tension between Rodgers and the board, and it's come to fruition this week with his departure.
Yeah, I understand that, Michael. But what I can't get my head around is why would he go now? If there were interested parties south of the border from where you sit, why would he not say to them, look, give me 10 weeks, let me complete something here that nobody has previously, and I'll walk away a hero? I just don't know what... It can't have been so bad that difference of opinion you're discussing, surely, to send him out of the door this past 7 days.
Yeah, and Richard, I think that is the key issue here that has so upset and angered the Celtic support, because they, like you, are saying, well, why didn't he leave in the summer? Why didn't he stay? He only had 14 more games to go, potentially, to win another treble. And, that's what's left a sour taste in the mouth for the supporters, that they think, well, if he's that highly regarded, and he certainly regards himself as an elite manager who should be in the English Premier League, then why not wait until the summer? What we don't know, and what we might find out this morning, because he's doing his first prep at Leicester, is whether Leicester insisted on coming now. Now, that's not going to make the Celtic support feel any better. They'll still think he should have left in the summer if he was going to go. But the reaction up here has been very extreme, and the transformation in Rodgers' reputation amongst the Celtic supporters has been brutal in the last 3-4 days.
Michael, has he destroyed his reputation totally amongst Celtic fans? Is there any way back for that reputation? In the cold light of day, when they reflect on 7 trophies back to back to back, all that wonderful football that they played there and watched under Brendan, is there any way back for his reputation at Celtic?
It doesn't really feel that way at the moment, Andy. The reaction has been savage and extreme. Now, you know, emotions are running pretty high at the moment. The temperature will kind of dip, and people will maybe calm and reassess in time. But the language that's been used at the moment has been, in some instances, it's been pretty disgraceful, to be honest with you. The personal attack on Rodgers. You've maybe seen some of the stuff that's been kicking about in media. And I think that pains a lot of the mainstream Celtic support, who think, well, you know, this guy did deliver us a lot. He was a hero to us. And it hurts them so much that he's left because he was so good. But I don't think he'll be showing his face around
you bet he won't.
Quite a while.
But
that is astonishing. You think you've seen it all in this game. Yeah. Because
Can't condone the personal attacks. Absolutely not. But I understand the frustration of Celtic fans, particularly, Michael, and the very same Brendan Rodgers, when at Liverpool, was talking to Raheem Sterling and Luis Suarez specifically about loyalty.
Mm. I mean...
What loyalty has he shown to Celtic?
I think another point that has really aggrieved the Celtic support is that he has played up his own credentials as a Celtic supporter from the start.
Yeah, he has.
You know, he talked about being in a dream job at Celtic. You know, I mentioned it in the piece that you referred to there. Right from the start, he's gone heavy on his own Celtic credentials. And I think a lot of supporters took that at face value and thought, yeah, he's one of us. And now they're saying, well, you know, one of us wouldn't leave at this key point in the season with, you know, they have a kind of handsome lead in the table, but they're not uncatchable at 8 points ahead, and they've got a difficult Scottish Cup tie coming tomorrow night. Mm. So I think now a lot of the supporters can recognise Rodgers' talent and strength as a coach and a manager, but they're also saying, well, did he play us a bit? You know, did he overplay the kind of Celtic credentials? Because he knew that those were the buttons to push with the support.
Or did he? Let me put this to you. Or did he, Mike, or was he getting to the point where we know what it's been like for Celtic in Scotland for the last 7-8 years without the threat of Rangers competing with them? It's been pretty comfortable for them. Did he get to the stage where he felt, well, is there enough competition for me in this country? And do I need to find it somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty easy ride for him domestically, you know. Celtic should always win the league at the moment because financially their advantages are so greater than anybody else's. Rodgers' great achievement in some ways domestically was to keep winning the cup ties. Yeah. He played 24 cup ties in Scotland and won them all, or came through them all. It's extraordinary level of consistency, you know. So was he getting competition? Probably not. I mean, Rangers are stronger now than they have been in the spell. But I think, to be honest, guys, it was really a case of the first opportunity he had to get back to England and back to the Premier League. He's taken it. You know, there was noise around Arsenal. There was noise around a potential move back. A move to Chinese football. But Leicester is the first one that's actually come in with an offer, and he's away. And he's away quickly. I mean, he was gone within 24 hours from training at Celtic. He's strolling around King Power Stadium in essentially in Leicester gear.
Michael, we're very grateful to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Michael Grant, Scottish football correspondent of The Times. You see, I'll throw... John Cross joins us. John, can I put this to you?
Oh, where is John?
That's maybe...
Nice.
Of course you can.
Maybe Leicester said to Brendan Rodgers, look, if you don't take this now, Rafa Benitez will. Anything in that?
Yeah, look, I do think that much has been said. And listen, the timing has surprised me. Please don't get me wrong. So I was fully expecting Brendan Rodgers to be the next Leicester manager, but in the summer. But I think we're being naive here to suggest then that basically Leicester wouldn't have pushed it to do it now. And maybe there's that veiled threat. Well, you know, if you don't take it now, maybe it might not be available in the summer. Who knows? And maybe it would have been. But I do think that any club worth their salt, and Leicester are, you know, and it's now established Premier League team, that they were champions 3 years ago, and I think that there's no doubt about it that they are a very attractive proposition for Brendan Rodgers because they're potentially the best of the rest and the next step, you know, on the ladder, if you like. And I felt it was inevitable that Brendan Rodgers would leave this summer, and I just think you never know quite if that opportunity will come again. And yes, it has taken me by a bit surprise in that he's taken it now, but it hasn't surprised me at all that he's gone from Celtic. And listen to Michael's interview there. I thought it was really interesting that basically, you know, the sort of the fallout behind the scenes. And I think it's Celtic's own fault for not backing the manager. He's been fantastic for Celtic Football Club.
I've got sympathy with the fans.
Yes, I understand they'll be disappointed. But come on, they've not backed him over the most modest targets.
They're going to win the title again.
I can understand they're going to win a treble again,
it looks like.
I cannot get, for the life of me, the club frustrations. Not at all.
Just leave it. Leave it 10 weeks. Walk away with your head up.
Absolutely.
Tell Leicester City, if you really want me, you're going to have to wait until the summer. There's an issue of respect here for a giant of a football club and their supporters.
I mean, you talked, John, you mentioned that Leicester, the attraction would be Leicester. Come on, I mean, if it was a top six club, I get it. You'd probably been out of there as quick as you like. I get that, but surely the attraction's not so much Leicester. And apologies if I'm offending Leicester fans, but isn't the attraction from Brendan Rodgers quite simply the Premier League and everything it gives you?
Oh, yeah, but Brendan Rodgers wanted to get back to the Premier League. And listen, I'm a big Brendan Rodgers fan. I like the way he plays football. I think he's a really good developer of young players, as he proved at Liverpool and everywhere else. He took Liverpool within a whisker of the Premier League title. Yeah. That would have been a remarkable achievement. I like the way he plays football. What do Leicester want? Leicester want style and performances. They want home results. They want a manager who will go for it in the Cups. Brendan Rodgers will do all of that. And I do think that, as I say, Leicester is as good as I think it could possibly be for Brendan Rodgers. I think there was a degree of interest from Arsenal last year, but that didn't materialise. So he's got to look at it and think, what's my next step? Brendan Rodgers always wanted to come back to Premier League football. There's no doubt in my mind that in the future he will believe that he can get back into into the elite clubs, if you like, and to do that, Leicester's the stepping stone. It's as simple as that. And I think in tandem, he'll do well for Leicester and Leicester will do well for him.
Well, if I'm a Leicester City fan, John, if that actually is the case and he's using me as a stepping stone back to a bigger group, I'm not overly impressed by that either, I have to say. Anyway, John, please stay with us.
Well, you know what I mean, guys.
I know what you mean.
I know what you mean. We know.
Entirely, I know what you mean. I'm sorry to point it out, but okay. More with John Cross in just a moment. John's at Tottenham this morning. We will, I mean, there's so much, isn't there, at the moment around the periphery. Not least Claudio Ranieri, who's gone as well. And we shall discuss that too next. I've just sent Crossy a message. He's obviously just picked it up, Andy. You see, that's modern technology.
Modern technology. He's got a smile on his face now. He's definitely got your message.
Keep it under your hat, John. It's just for you, that one.
That's just for you, yeah.
And Maurizio Pochettino wins a trophy at the London Football Writers Awards last night.
Did he?
Yes. Like that tweet.
Which manager of the year was he? Tottenham?
London.
Oh, London's.
London's.
Well, it's got to be London's, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, if he can't win London's Manager of the Year, he's never going to win it.
I was surprised, though, John, again. What was he thinking when... look, they've been in and out and in and out and in and out so many times this year, now officially out. Were you surprised to see him have a go at the players in the manner that he did? Lack of attitude, lack of... what was it? Ambition?
Desire?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week for him, without doubt. I mean, last Friday he was talking about trying to sort of focus the players purely on Burnley. Burnley went horribly wrong. Tuesday, he was apologising to Mike Dean and then also saying that basically it's going to take 10 years to get this club right and basically change the mentality into a winning team. And then the wheels came horribly off at Chelsea. And for those that don't know the dynamics of London football and London rivalries, Chelsea and Tottenham are absolute arch enemies, and Chelsea fans will love that victory and absolutely really relish that. And it really has, I'm afraid, killed off Tottenham's season as we see it. I mean, yes, they're, you know, potentially in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. It's hard to see them winning that. But really, the title has gone. Now, if they lose to Arsenal tomorrow at Wembley, they are sucked into a battle for the top four. Make no mistake about that. I have to say, I do think that Tottenham will probably win at Wembley tomorrow. But it's been a very, very disappointing, disheartening week that's left a lot of Spurs fans thinking, where are we going with this? And now, needless to say, Pochettino is now being linked with moves to Real Madrid. And it's a really interesting dynamic as to where this season and where this club goes with Pochettino.
I mean, talking about wheels coming off, I think at Fulham, the wheels never really got on their season, John, from day one. But their appointment of Ranieri raised eyebrows. It's been a disaster for them, really. Do you think they regret doing that?
Oh, absolutely, Andy. It's a strange club, Fulham. I mean, I think most Londoners will tell you they've got a soft spot for Fulham because they're probably, you know, the nice, cuddly Fulham, never a threat to your own first team, and they're everyone's second team in London. But the fact is, behind the scenes, it is a bit of a mess in that they buy their own players, basically. They have to pass this almost a test, really, to be of the right age, the right calibre, the right sell-on value. And what Fulham did last season raised eyebrows, and everyone thought, oh, Fulham will do really well this season because they spent over £100 million. But they actually bought a load of similar players with no defensive backbone and left the team and the squad in a horrible mess. Djukanovic, who I think was brilliant for Fulham, led them up, quickly dispatched, barely given any sort of time.
No.
And then I think Ranieri was the wrong appointment.
Yeah.
You know, he's put his reputation from Leicester firmly on the line. I think if you ask Fulham fans now what they think of Ranieri and the kind of fairy tale at Leicester, well, you know, they'll tell you to take a running jump, frankly. And it, as far as they're concerned, that reputation's gone. But it wasn't the right appointment.
No.
Yes, he will tighten you up defensively, but he struggled even to do that because they had such a poor selection of defenders. And then at the other end, the goals completely dried up as well. Fulham are you know, I love Fulham. I've got a real soft spot for them, but I do think they're in a terrible mess. I think Scott Parker is the maybe the appointment that they should have made after Djukanovic. He'll hopefully bring a bit of new hope and new desire to the team. But honestly, Ranieri has taken them backwards rather than any sort of hope of survival.
I you share look at your now affection running, for them, John.
Where
I,
they are in the table, it looks already a lost cause.
Had many, many good. Many good occasions at Fulham down the years.
Yeah.
From the time when Tommy Trinder was chairman. Even John won't remember that.
No, you're old.
Yeah. Your colleagues today, John, in the Mirror, suggesting that Ollie's got the job. Is it done?
Well, I think it will be. I don't think it's done quite yet, but I think it's just a matter of dotting the I's, crossing the T's. I was at Palace in midweek. That was their eighth straight away win. And what is remarkable about Man United is that we used to love, as football fans, didn't we, when United came to town and came to your place, that they would play with a style and a swagger to try and go and win the game. They'd lost that under Mourinho, and that's what they've got back under Solskjaer. And honestly, they're in terrific form. Solskjaer is a breath of fresh air. He's got the whole club buzzing. He's got the whole club smiling again. It's wonderful, wonderful to see, I think. And basically, Solskjaer, I think, absolutely will be the man. I'm sure he's got the job. They're not in the business of looking now for anyone else. It's just a question, I think, of when he gets it rather than if. Wow. And I tell you what, he's been fantastic for Solskjaer. I'm really warm to him. The way he talks about United's tradition and style, I absolutely love it.
I was just a quick question and aside on that as well, John. Do you think then they're that sure that they're going to give Solskjaer it, that they might even before the season ends go, right, we're going to end all speculation, Ollie, it's yours?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they're thinking, Andy. I think the position has been very clear that basically, I don't think Solskjaer was in their thoughts about permanent manager when he became caretaker. He's basically put himself in the frame for that. And it wouldn't surprise me if they did it, you know, before too long, announced it. I genuinely don't think that decision has been taken before now. But as he keeps on winning, I just think he's made himself absolutely irresistible. And so it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they announce it before the end of the season.
John, we would be naive to think that football is not in any way affected by social drug use. Mm-hmm. Agreed?
Totally naive.
Most of the time, if someone gets caught, because you're going to infringe their human rights, you won't hear about it. A player will disappear off the radar perhaps for 6 months and resurface.
Certainly a Premier League player, yeah.
Well, that's the point that I'm about to make.
Oh, right.
We understand why. We don't want these youngsters named. It's getting help is a process that should be private. Mm-hmm. But this week, kid at Peterborough United, John, run out of the game for 4 years as a result of refusing to take a test. This flies in the face of what we've heard, speculatively, granted, but down the years about the point Andy made, Premier League players perhaps getting away with this kind of thing, whereas if you're Josh Yorweth at Peterborough, it's easy. It's easy to nail a kid, isn't it? Mm. Is there a problem in that respect?
Well, listen, it's a case I've actually looked at because the whole thing sort of fascinates me. And I must say, Sam Wallace in the Daily Telegraph this week wrote a really interesting piece on
it.
I mean, it just highlights the lopsided nature of doping rules at the moment, and whether that's overseen by the FA, who adopt wider rules, or whether it's FIFA in general. How can it be that a player who absolutely knowingly refused a test. This isn't dodging the testers. He basically said to the faces of the testers, no, I'm not going to take it. You have to ask yourself at that stage why he refused to take it. He was then obviously suspended. If he'd taken a test and failed for a recreational drug, as we know it, he would have been banned, as it stands, for 3 months. Because they don't know quite what to do, because he actually refused, this is where the four-year ban has suddenly come into play. How can that possibly be? I do think that we have to enter, I think, within football, a set structure that is known by the players at whatever level. I used to go to a lot of UK sport briefings where they would sort of kind of detail the sort of how many failures you'd had, whether it be sort of for cocaine, for ecstasy, for recreational drugs, for marijuana, whatever it might be. And people would be surprised at just how many failures they would have in those quarterly reports, particularly in the lower divisions. Now, the lower divisions, the bottom two of the league, would often sort of have threes and fours in the quarters of those things. And we'd never hear anything more about it. You just get on with life. We can't pretend it doesn't happen. But then to ban someone, I think, for 4 years for refusing to take the test, presumably because he maybe feared the worst, I don't know, that we're really entering into something that is utterly bizarre, and it just highlights the weird nature of our doping rules, and indeed the actual bans and punishments which are set in stone for footballers and sport in general in this country. Absolutely bizarre. Honestly, we need to really tighten those rules up so the players know where they stand, and they know that the punishment will be harsh if they take drugs of any kind.
Agreed. One last question, John, then we'll let you go, and it's a yes or no. Do you think a high-profile Premier League footballer would have been dealt with in the same way?
No. I think the pressure would have been far greater. I think we're naive to think that dope testers do not hear about and then target players who they think may be abusing, whether that's recreational, performance enhancing. I promise you that basically they do target, you know, Premier League players. They really do. They hear about things, they hear about whispers and gossip, whether that's from the club or whether that's from other players or whether that's whoever it might be, and then they target it. They really do. But no, you're quite right, Keezy. If that had been a Premier League player of some note, then the story would have been huge, and I agree with you. I don't think he would have been banned for 4 years. I mean, just look at the Mutu case, for example. You know, that's still a case that, you know, is sort of baffling, really, as to sort of the complexities of it. But I do think that yet again, we're treating players from a different division on a different scale.
That's what I love about John. That's why I know he's a top journalist. Why use one word that you asked for when you can use 500? Well done, Johnny.
I know it's a subject, Andy, that basically I do feel really
exactly
strongly about.
I know,
I just
John.
Couldn't do it in one word.
John, listen, you're absolutely welcome. You might not have got past the sub-editors with that, but
yeah, you wouldn't, no.
We're a different medium. We do thank you, and we'll spend time with you next week. John, thanks. Top man, John Cross. And when we come back, we're Celtic heading in some respects today.
Yeah.
But we are very pleased when we come back that we're going to be in the company of Neil Lennon,
story, yeah.
who's had his problems, of course, himself. Did so at Hibs, walked away recently. He was due to come and see us, Andy, this
I
week,
know.
As you know,
yes.
Wednesday night for the Premier League games. Got a call, and he is now the new manager of Celtic. Wherever you are in the world, it's good to have your company. Amongst us this weekend,
yes.
Our special one is back on a variety of programming. And back in the hot seat at Celtic, their special one.
Mm.
Neil Lennon joins us.
Yes.
Danny, how are you?
I'm great, thanks, Richard. How are you?
Yeah,
hi, Andy.
Hi, Neil. I was going to say, I was looking with bated breath at the appointment they would put in. I thought, I hope they'll put in somebody who doesn't really know the game, who doesn't really know Scottish football and Celtic, and we'll get a chance of catching him this season. And I turned round and knew they put in Neil Lennon. I thought, oh, yeah, it's going to be tough.
How comfortable does it feel, Lenny?
It was like walking into someone else's house, you know, or owning the house before and then going in afterwards. It's been, you know, tumultuous couple of days. Got a great result on Wednesday night, left it very, very late. But it's starting to settle down for me a little bit now. The last couple of days have been very, very hectic, as you can imagine.
I knew you'd settled in very quickly, Lenny, when I was keeping my eye on that score in midweek. And it got to 90 minutes and I thought, yes, we've got a couple of points back on you. And then he nicked a 92nd minute winner. I thought, Lennon's definitely back, I thought to myself. But it's only 5 years, Neil, since you were there. Has much changed? I know it's hard to judge in a couple of days, but do you think much has changed around Celtic and Celtic Park since you left?
Yeah, certainly at the training ground, Andy, the technology here now that, you know, Brendan's installed, the organisation, the routines, it's all very, very different from when I was there. So it's an aid, as you know.
Right.
Obviously, it's not like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer going into Man United where the whole place needed lifted. It was just, you know, a case of coming in and keeping things going as they were, really, because the boys have been in very good form since the turn of the year. But you have to manage it as well. There was a huge sort of disappointment on Brendan leaving and had to look after the players. And it's not about me and it's not about Brendan leaving. It's about the club and certainly the players and just keeping them on the job in hand.
Is it a very different job for you, Neil? I know they've put you in as to the end of the season. So I know if you were probably given it full time, you'd want to probably start immediately putting your own stamp on this Celtic. But is it, because there's only 10 weeks left of the season, is it just a case of ticking them over and making sure you get to the finish line?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've all got their sort of own individual routines, the players. They've got the routine of training and their stuff. And I don't want to come in and say, right, no, that doesn't work for me or blah, blah, blah. You know, the players have been ticking along nicely. And, you know, they've done remarkable things under Brendan in the last 2.5 years. And it would be stupid of me to come in and go, this isn't right or that's not right. I've just got to come in and manage the players as best I can. I'm basically, at the minute, Andy, working for them. They're not working for me.
Yeah.
We're disappointed, obviously, Lenny, that you didn't make it to see us last week. But when did you start to get a sniff that something was going to happen?
Well, you know, Claude Puel left on the Sunday. And then I got a phone call on the sort of Monday afternoon that, you know, something was brewing. I was a bit surprised at the timing, obviously, but, you know, Brendan sort of thoughts on that. And then I had to cancel the flight on Monday evening because I was going to speak to Peter Lawwell on Tuesday morning, and I more or less knew on Monday evening that I'd got it to the end of the season.
I mean, they haven't been short of the fixtures. I mean, it's almost like they handpicked them for you, Lenny, the first couple of games you've got. I'm just wondering in front of you on that table, have you got that hard hat ready for tomorrow?
Well, the other one I used on Wednesday night, that's battered, so I need to get a new one.
But it is quite a start, isn't it?
Pardon?
It is quite a start, Wednesday, and then you've got that cup game tomorrow against Hibs.
Yeah. I know, it's just, again, it's like, you know, 3-4 weeks ago I was the manager at Hibs, so I know all the players and the staff, and now I'm going back there tomorrow as the Celtic manager. It's very surreal, but you know the way football is, Richard. It throws up these little quirks and coincidences, and at the end of the day, we've, you know, they're on the cusp of doing something very special here again, and
make
sure that I'm fully concentrated on getting that right for tomorrow.
Course, absolutely irresistible for you. Are you thinking beyond the end of the season?
No. I've just got to take it game by game. There's still a lot of work to be done in terms of the league. Rangers are going very, very well at the minute under Stephen, and they're scoring a lot of goals. And, you know, and Morelos have got, you know, a great player and a great goal scorer. So they're still a big, big threat, and we've just got to maintain our consistency and our standards so far. And you know what it's like up here. One sort of even draw at the minute, or one any drop points at all, and the psychology of the things changed very, very, very quickly.
I was just thinking on that subject of Rangers and Celtic. You know, when you were last there 5 years ago, Celtic were pretty much, I mean, the real dominant force. Rangers were way, way beyond, back from where they are now. If it continues, do you think that it's good for Scottish football in general that Rangers are back competitive with Celtic again?
Of course, Andy. You know, I left in 2014, there was no Rangers. You know,
no.
We won the league.
No.
We won the league by 30 points. you know, part of my reason for leaving was, you know, was I developing, or was it getting any better? Was there a challenge? And there wasn't. And now, slowly, surely, they've built their way back up, and they're getting stronger and stronger each season. They've had a very good Europa League run this year. That was a real bonus for them, I think. And Stephen handled the qualifiers and the group very, very well.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, it's been, you know, they turned Celtic over, you know, end of December, and that psychologically was a big lift for them as well. So
we've
got, you know, more and more like a championship race now as the years progress, which is obviously very good and very exciting for the public.
Well, obviously, Lenny, we wish you well. I'll make a prediction for the weekend.
Go on.
Rangers get a penalty.
Well, we do. Oh, come on. We do get the ball in the box a lot. Come on. I'll make another prediction. Celtic get a stoppage time winner.
By the way, just before we lose you, Lenny, there's a big England-Scotland match being played in Dubai this weekend. McAvenny's out, McCoist is here as well. Can you send your best wishes to the boys?
Absolutely. I wish he was there with them. I'd be there refereeing it. I'd send McCoist off after
Listen, good luck to you, and thanks for taking time out to talk to
us. Thanks, Lenny.
Absolute pleasure. Good to see you, boys. Thanks.
Cheers, Neil.
just
perfect.
Funny
enough, it's perfect.
You mentioned McCoist and him. The last time I think I saw them together on a touchline, they were fighting at Celtic Park.
But that's what football does to you, is it not? Good friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good absolutely.
Friend. Michael Johnson, manager of Guyana, who are one game away from qualifying for the Gold Cup. A country, Andy, that's recently discovered copious amounts of oil and gas. Heard that elsewhere?
Quite a few places, particularly where we're standing. Yeah.
Michael Johnson, who used to play for Birmingham and Derby County, so very good. Two good reasons to talk to him. Derby in a minute. But first of all, Michael, Guyana, can you fill in the gaps for me? I don't think I've explained it particularly well. How is it you're managing in Guyana? Why is it, or how is it, they're about to make statements on the world stage?
Yeah, well, first of all, hello to both of you. Really, really thankful for allowing me to join you. But, it's an interesting project. We are right on the cusp of something special, 90 minutes away from qualifying for a tournament, which is the first time Guyana in its history would have qualified for any major tournament. I've been down there the last 7 or 8 months now. I interact that with my role at Derby. But it's an interesting one because, as you rightly said, there's the oil, there's the gas findings in Guyana. There's also potentially the qualifications for the Gold Cup. So right now, Guyanese football is Guyana itself is in an interesting place. If the football is successful, if the leadership level of the oil and the gas is successful, then it's an interesting place. It could be a mini Qatar in the next few years.
It's a fascinating place on that basis, Michael, isn't it?
What kind of level, Michael, are we talking about you're working at there? I mean, with the quality of the footballers.
Well, a lot of the players, Andy, probably you'd say League One or League Two.
Right.
We've got Callum Harriott, which is from Reading. We've got a lad called Keanu Marsh-Brown, who's from Newport. Neil Dance, who's at Bury.
Okay.
So we've got a lot of talented players operating in League One, League Two. Some probably in the non-league. Some from the MLS. And, of course, you've got to include the local-based players. So for me, as the manager, it's really about getting the balance right, because you've got to respect that a lot of the local-based players would not have the expertise and the professionalism that what the UK and the MLS players bring. But of course, you need the identity, you need the culture of the local talented player.
Well, I think you beg stealing and borrowing a lot at the moment, Michael. I think Derby County have helped out with a lot of the kit that you use to train with down there. But if the production comes online as is expected, you could end up buying Derby, presumably.
Now, why would you want to do that?
I wouldn't go that far, Rich, but listen, the oil find is going to change things in the country in the next, 3 or 4 years. It is quite a lot of oil which they've found. But with that, obviously, you can see already the influence of America, Russia, obviously the Middle East, now flooding to Guyana. So it's an interesting proposition, and it's coinciding with sports. It's coinciding with the success of the football team. So you'd like to think in the next few years that, the finance could go into the grassroots and start to really develop the program further. So it's an exciting time, but first and foremost, we've got to make sure we qualify for the Gold Cup to put ourselves in a real prime position.
When is the Belize game, Michael? Quickly, when is it?
The Belize game's March the 23rd. There's considerable amount of interest in the game. I've heard with Anderson himself, he's coming out for the game, which is going to be an honour to welcome him. So it really, really is a game for the whole country.
Great.
I've also heard that people already have contacted me from the UK who have got Guyanese heritage, that they're looking to fly out for this game as well.
Yeah, so no pressure, Michael. We will be back
no
in
pressure.
Touch, trust me. And we're just expecting the win at this point.
Yes.
Give our best, please, to the gaffer there at Derby County. I hope the wheels are not coming off as they tend to do at this stage of the game.
No, they're not at all,
they're
Rich. Don't say
they're
that.
Not coming off. It's just
don't
a lull.
It's a minor blip.
Yes, that's it. It's only lasted 7 games. Don't worry, Michael.
We'll talk to you at the back end of March, Michael. Thanks for your time.
After your victory.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Top class. Rory. Thanks, Michael Excellent. Johnson, the head Top coach class. Of Guyana. Watch out for that. We shall be following it. Tottenham play Arsenal this Saturday, 1500 Mecca, live on 2 and 11 in our part of the world.
I asked you, what about that game, right? They're out of the league, yeah?
Yeah.
Agreed?
Yes.
So they've got a massive game in Dortmund. I know they're 3-0 up, but they could still slip up in Dortmund.
Lose that. I'm with John Cross. They're looking back rather than forward. They need to be careful.
So you think full strength? He's not going to rest anybody?
Okay. Has to. Incidentally, Harry Kane, no charge.
I can think
of two or three occasions last year, Andy, when again, players in lower leagues or smaller clubs found themselves in trouble.
Got done,
didn't he? Yes, despite the fact the referee saw it. Mm. Fulham-Chelsea, that's Sunday at 17:05. And Everton play Liverpool at 19:15. Jose Mourinho will be in our studios to watch that with us. Plenty of good quality European football on our channels as well this weekend. The best, big of the bunch, that, obviously.
That is a biggie.
Covered in a variety of languages on all kinds of different channels and 4K available.
It's a big game for Real Madrid now, after what happened in midweek.
Very much so.
Goodness me.
All of the Premier League games live across our channels. Biggest football show on the planet returns this Saturday. Jason McAteer and Paul Robinson with us. Enjoy your sporting weekend. Thanks for your company.